When he, from your perspective, when he says Kosuke looks like he's in a Chinese fire drill, what happened there? What was he talking about?
Well, you know, Dan said prior to that game that there's no way that somebody can within 1 week prepare for the complexities of that offense. So they didn't know what the hell they were doing. I mean, Dad was doing all these motions and all these other things. You know, that 65 toss power trap that they scored on, I don't think they used that except for a preseason game at the beginning of 1969. So they had never even seen that play. They didn't even see it through the whole course of the year. So, you know, they had so many different plays with so many different formations that there was no way that a team that could prepare, you know, adequately for that game. So it was very evident by that statement. They were running around like they didn't know what the heck to do.
That's funny. When he called the play for Frank, what was it, 6-0 reverse? Uh-huh. How big of a set up the scene for that? How big of a moment in the game?
Well, basically what Dad knew that the two defensive ends were big pursuers to the quarterback. So they read, you know, sack before they read run. So he knew that at some point in time that if they that they could trap those guys and run that reverse, they'd be running towards a quarterback and a guy would be coming down and cut blocking them and it would be wide open. So it did several times. And you know what? You know, looking at that Super Bowl game, that Frank Pitts had one hell of a game. Boy, he had a great game. Made some big catches and those were his reverses. It was a great day for Frank Pitts.
Yeah, that was a big moment for sure in the game. Well, when you encounter some, you know, maybe a younger person these days that didn't grow up seeing your dad coaching, what would you want them to know about your dad? What would you, if there was something that you could tell somebody that you would want them to know about your dad, what would you say?
Well, he was just a great father. You know, it goes. He was a great friend. He had a sweetheart. I remember him chasing the janitor at Arrowhead around. He loved them. He was just a people guy. All the guys at airports, the bag man, hey coach, and they all loved him. And they all come up and he's always talking to them. And you know, I just think he was just an amazing guy, and he had a lot of character. And he had a lot of color, and I think he was a tremendous salesman, and I think he sold all those things, which made him the great coach, father, and spouse that he was.
Do you think that him having such a distinct personality? Do you think that the way that he was, is that part of what made him such a good coach, being able to have all that energy to work with his players the way that he did?
I think, you know, it starts with, you know, in the core of believing in what you do. And, you know, talking to Abner and talking to some of these guys, I said, you know, tell me what made Dad such a great coach? You know, and he said a couple things. One, that he was a great salesman and he sold. You know, he sold very well, and he made people believe in what he was doing. And he said, you know, like I mentioned in the opening conversation I had with Abner. You know, I think all kids and everybody young, they want to believe in something. They want to believe in something, and they won't believe in. They'll continue to believe in something until that point in time that they trip you up. And Dad was just very consistent. He never, if it was Lenny or if it was Otis or it was Nate Allen, he treated everybody the same way. And I think he treated them with respect. And I think he had them prepared impeccably every single week, the best that they could possibly be. I just think that
He was cut out for it.
I mean, this is what he was born. And even after he finished coaching, I think that deep down he wishes he would have coached again. And I used to ask him, you know, I said, Dad, what do you think? Do you think he'd ever want to go back? Yeah, if there was a right situation. I think the sad thing was he never was asked. You know, here's this great, unbelievable talent sitting there. And now the way coaches are rehashed, you know, it's just, you know, one guy goes to 1 year, he's with this guy, and they're, you know, it's all like 8 or 9 guys that are just rehashed in a different position every year. But he never really got another opportunity to coach after New Orleans. He never was asked, which is kind of a shame.
You know, this is somewhat of a tricky question, but, you know, him and Lamar had such a, you know, roller coaster of a relationship. How did they kind of end up together? They came from nothing to, you know, they went everywhere together. How did they end up?
I think it had a lot of emotion in it because Dad honestly thought that Lamar was like his brother that he never had, and he genuinely deep down loved him. And you know, they did, you know, they started that lead together. I mean, you know, there was no playbooks, there was no colors, there was no legacy, there was no anything. They did all of that together, starting, you know, they were in the trenches together. And you know, I think it, as things grew and became, you know, more diverse, Lamar started becoming more diverse with his investments in different things. Dad didn't have the interaction with him. He, you know, he had to deal with Jack. And so, you know, Dad was best man at Lamar and Jack's, I mean, Lamar and Norma's wedding. I mean, that was, they were like inseparable. And so it all worked out. I mean, it was sad, the Kansas City thing, because Dad loved Kansas City. And, you know, that was still was his team all the way till the time he passed. And, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do when you're running a big organization like that. And I think Lamar thought that was the best thing to do at the time. So they did, but it's kind of ironic the fact that, you know, he won 3 championships and almost on the cusp of 4, and there hadn't been a whole lot of them since. So mm-hmm. I think you come to appreciate what a great coach he was, you know, when somebody's gone. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, you just, when you win, people expect you to continue to win. And it's just such a special thing.
Well, how would you say your dad's legacy lives on today?
Well, thank God it lives on through what we're doing today and through me giving playbooks to Sean Payton and to Joe Lombardi and, you know, some of my dad's letters and things like that. You know, if they just use one little thing and give him credit, he's still alive in the game.
Could you just kind of explain what what went into the giving the playbook or giving the letter to Sean Payton and the playbook and that sort of thing? And why, how did that happen?
Well, Sean lived over here and not very far from me, and I'd see him out and we'd talk, and I said, you know, we have this whole garage full of it. And, you know, and when Sean was hired by the Saints, I in the paper, he just said the right things. You know, he said, look, we got to get some guys with some character here. So they go right out and they go get a quarterback that, you know, it kind of reminds you, it's kind of funny, but you got a 6-foot quarterback, you know, from Purdue University, same as what Dad had, you know, and here's this guy, there's a lot of parallels, you know, he's from, you know, from the Midwest, and he was an athlete himself, and he never had a head coaching job until this, and, you know, I just liked what he was saying and what he was seemed like to be standing for. So I'd see him out, and I said, look, I have this whole garage full of stuff, and if you ever had any interest in taking a look at it, I'd love to show it to you. So I ended up, you know, giving him a couple playbooks, and I gave him some letters and some speeches. And, you know, Dad had a bunch of his speeches recorded. So he had somebody transcribe them, and we had, you know, we had a pretty good breakdown of what he said before a whole bunch of different games starting in 1969. So I gave him some copies of that. So he calls me up one day and he said, "Look, Dale, I'm using." This was after the Saints got beat in the first round of the playoff game. I guess playoffs, the year that they reopened the dome. And he said, "You know, that letter that your dad wrote about Oakland just really hit me, and it was just perfectly worded and all that. I just changed the names and the things, and I sent it out to my team." And he told a bunch of people that he did that. So, so we kind of have a friendship, and Joe Lombardi's a really good friend of mine. He lives over here on the North Shore. He's Vince Lombardi's grandson, and he's also Drew Brees' quarterback coach. And he will be a head coach one day in pro football, and so I've given him some items as well, you know, for him, and for maybe hopefully he'll pick something up that might help him somewhere along the way. But all those things help keep my dad's legacy alive a little bit.
Yeah, it kind of talk a little bit about how, you know, that you've got little pieces of your dad floating throughout the NFL still.
Right.
Well, I think we're about wrapping it up. I was wondering if I could just, you know, we might end up doing a piece on Johnny Robinson. So I was wondering if you could just kind of give me a, you know, what did Johnny Robinson as a player mean to you?
He was just such a great player. You know, he had played at LSU, and he was in the same backfield as Billy Cannon the year that they won the national championship, I think, 58. And, you know, he was drafted by the Texans and as a halfback. And Dad saw in him, you know, this, he was a great athlete. He was very fast. He had a great nose for the hole. He thought that he would be a great strong safety. So he ended up switching him, I think, in 63. And, you know, he became one of the greatest. He should be in the Hall of Fame. It's a travesty that he's not in the Hall of Fame. He should be in the Hall of Fame as well.
Describe his playing style. What kind of safety was he?
Well, he just had a great nose for the ball, and he was very fast. He had great range. He's tough. I remember him breaking his ribs before the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl IV. He hit a yard marker on the sidelines in Oakland and broke two of his ribs. He comes out and plays a hell of a game against Minnesota, makes some big tackles and an interception. So he was just a great player with a great nose for the ball and a great person on top of it all. And he's running a boys' home in Monroe, Louisiana now, and he's given his whole life up to trying to help kids.
Awesome. I think that's all.
We covered pretty well.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention that you haven't already?
Well, one thing I was thinking that was kind of unique to me was the fact that I used to ride to the football games with my dad. You know, and he had this Imperial, this big thing. It was like a boat and had big high seats. And this was back in the 60s. And he had an 8-track tape deck. So, you know, as a kid, and you probably can relate to this, you know, at some point, if you were playing sports, you'd have some music or something that you would have that you'd turn on and it would pump you up for the game, and you'd play it kind of loud, and you would, you know, have the windows up, and you'd be rolling down the road and kind of maybe even accelerating. Well, my dad did that with polkas. Dad had, you know, he had Whoopi John, which was one of his favorites, Lawrence Welk, and Frank Yankovic tapes. And they all sounded the same. It was kind of like da 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 da. So Dad would have this thing blaring We're driving. He's getting pumped up for the game. We're driving to, you know, to the Brooklyn, old Brooklyn Stadium, you know, stadium on Brooklyn, the old municipal stadium. Things cranked up, and he's doing this and this, you know, with his fingers, and he's, you know, kind of humming along. And at the end of the song, you know, we would go da 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 da. And at the end, he goes, and I go, Dan, what the heck are you doing there? He goes, I'm stuffing the sausage, boys, stuffing the sausage at the end of the game. So, I thought it was just kind of a cute little story.
That's
that
it's an original person right there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So. Well, I think that about covers it. We should go meet up with Frank.
Here, let me see one little bit.